But also you say that culture shapes illness, and you know, we see in the Medicare the prescription drug debate. You know, I try in my own health concerns to avoid drug surgery and radiation at any cost. Now, that doesn't mean if I get hit by a car, I don't want to be airlifted to Harborview Medical Center, obviously, when the mechanistic part of me is wrong. But we're talking about a dominance, a dominism approach to healthcare. You know, you find the bad part and kill it. And isn't that what prescription drugs and this whole debate is sort of misses?
Well, yeah, it does. It's really missing completely the target. And I can only say that because in the indigenous world, where people do continue to have access to and live their cultures, they realize that there really are two kinds of healing systems that we're looking at. One is for broken arms and catastrophic kinds of things. And, you know, frankly, there's a fairly good system that's been developed to deal with all of that. But something in excess of 80% of all the disease and illness that human beings experience are called chronic disease. And most of those diseases are caused by human intervention or failure to intervene. Let's put it this way. Human beings have intervened with alcohols and drugs that actually do have deleterious effects on the body over time. Purified sugar, which is actually another drug, to be honest with you, or refined wheats and that sort of thing to make breads, another form of drug, frankly. Now, all of those are commercially motivated in terms of their availability in the world. They're not related in any way, shape, or form to anybody's health. They're not even related to people's diet. They're really related to a price and a shelf life, the consequence of which is you've got a whole population busily out there consuming an awful lot of garbage that makes them very sick. And, of course, if they have no cultural connection whatsoever, they don't see what happens to their own body. All they think is that they've now got a mechanical problem. So the mechanistic system that's really designed for broken bones and catastrophic illness tries to deal with chronic disease, and it does it with pills.
The mechanistic system, meaning the kind of health care we have in this country.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
But you keep going back to losing the connection to culture. Now, obviously, as an indigenous man, you have a strong connection to your culture. What is it that the average person who's not indigenous, someone from the dominant culture, what is it they're missing? Is it that connection to the Celtic wisdom if they're Irish and going back far enough into their ancestry to realize that? I mean,
sure.
Give me more on that.
I spoke with a producer friend of mine one time about indigenous people about, 20-some-odd years ago. And she turned to me and she said, "But Rudy, we're all human beings. We must be all indigenous." And I said, "Well, that's true. We really are." And as I mentioned earlier, the only difference between those who are and those who don't understand what that is about is that one group is forgotten, the other still understands its culture. Given that everyone actually does have cultural roots, and there is a group who's forgot them, basically, what one needs and can do, and most of us suggest this, actually, is that for everyone to reach back into their life, their communitarian existence. Now, some people say, "Oh, my gosh, I come from I don't know where. I'm Heinz 57," is the usual expression. What most people don't realize is that we're all Heinz 57. We all come on the backs of a whole collection of people going back 50,000, 100,000 years. It's just that we've gone out and distributed ourselves around the world and adapted to a lot of different kinds of circumstances so that we have Inuit people who can live in the circumpolar region and eat blubber and nothing else other than seal meat and whale meat, all protein and fat, and live extraordinarily well. Whereas Bedouin people couldn't possibly do that in northern Africa. They have to eat other kinds of food, a lot of coconut meat and that sort of thing. But they couldn't eat whale meat and survive. We end up with all these differentiations, most of which are really environmentally induced, culturally induced, basically. But if we take a step back in time, we come to realize that we all originate in essentially the sort of rooted arenas. And the separation then ends up being over time. Everyone has a cultural root. Not everyone seeks a cultural root. You and I both have the ability to do that, but if we don't spend the time realizing about not only what we eat, but how we live and the choices we make, well, we don't see that they are culturally connected. A lot of them are in here. There's a neat kind of Greek word. It's called ethos, spelled A-E-T-H-O-S or E-T-H-O-S, which is a system of intellectual concepts that we all agree to, as if, say, in a consensus trance. We all agree in the city that a red light means stop and a green light means go. We come to know that because we've intellectually established that. There's nothing in nature that says red means stop or green means go. It's just we've agreed to that. We've also agreed that yellow lines separate one side of a road to the other and that we're not to go over it if there's a double line. Those are examples of ethos. Cities and states have ethos. They're all constructs of our mind. We create them. They're much like our defense system. They're much like, frankly, our mechanistic medical system. They're designed to deal with a kind of more material world, but they're also designed to deal with a world of unfamiliarity. That is, the differences between you and me is that we don't know each other. We have no cultural binding. So we create an ethos between us that says, here are the rules by which we will function. We negotiate them out, we agree to them, and we live by them. The extent to which we're successful has something to do with the success of how we've organized. But the degree to which we find ourselves in disagreement, we may conflict with one another. If we were living in the same culture, the culture itself will have created a whole host of customs and practices that will define how we relate to one another. Now, there are many people who say that that poses, that is the cultural definition, would pose some limitations on the way we deal with one another. But I would say there are no more or less limitations imposed on us within a cultural context than in, say, with an ethos. It's just that there are two ways of operating, one with strangers, one with friends.
With just a couple of minutes left, and maybe this is unfair to ask this kind of a question here at the end of the interview, but you know, let me play devil's advocate and suggest that you know, the dominant culture says that, hey, this is a Darwinian world. The strong survive, and we're the strongest, and we're now allegedly harvesting the spoils of the American, the Pax Americana, the hegemony, being the strongest and the toughest, and now good things are ready to come. We just have to take out a few terrorists, and we've got another Garden of Eden.
Well, very quickly, the 19th century provided us with two very broad ideas. One was evolution, but it was a biological evolution. The other one was social Darwinism, which was a bastardization of evolution as a scientific notion applied in a social context. The problem that with the social application of evolution is it doesn't work. Hitler found out it didn't work. In fact, the survival of the fittest would suggest that the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics should still be a state. It's not any longer. Another example of where that whole principle or concept that came out of the 19th century fails.
How did it fail, Russia or the USSR?
Well, it collapsed because within itself, it no longer had agreement to the core. People simply did not agree. The 150 different nations that were there said, we don't agree any longer.
Why was it well suited under a Darwinistic sort of philosophy to prosper?
Well, it was the most powerful state, along with the United States, being a nuclear power. And it was supposed to be a superpower. There were only two. Now there's only one. Who's to say there's going to be one?
Maybe the Chinese.
Maybe.
Should someone want more information about your work and tell us about how they might get involved? Certainly looking at the website, cwis.org is one way.
Yeah. And sure, they can get a hold of us through the web, or they can get a hold of us by mail at Center for World Indigenous Studies, PMB 214 1001 Cooper Point Road, Southwest 140, Olympia 98502.
Dr. Rudy Reeser is our guest. He's the co-founder and chair of the Center for World Indigenous Studies. And once again, their website, cwis.org. For more information, you'll find a link on our website at inpeoria.org. That's inpeoria.org. Support for this program comes from the City of Auburn, Washington, inviting small businesses and artists to consider relocating to a traditional small American town with commuter rail service to Seattle and low housing costs. Details online at ci.auburn.wa.us. Auburn, more than you imagined. By Scarf Ford Isuzu in Auburn, family owned for 3 generations and 80 years. Information at scarf-ford.com. Scarf Ford in Auburn, 253-833-1500. And by a grant to honor the memory of Al Davis, who lived in Connecticut. For details on program guests, underwriters, or upcoming programs, or to find out other stations and airtimes for this show, check out the website for It Plays in Peoria Productions at inpeoria.org. That's inpeoria.org. You'll find show summaries, contact information, details on the organization, and links to our other projects, the Northwest Spoken Word Lab and auburncommunityradio.com. inpeoria.org. Another village building project of the nonprofit organization known as It Plays in Peoria Productions. Well, that's our program. Details on guests or underwriters is online at inpeoria.org. That's inpeoria.org. Underwriters help keep this show on the air, along with your tax-deductible contribution. Please consider supporting the underwriters, making a donation to us, or buying a CD copy of today's program for $15 post-paid. Send a check with the show's subject matter and date to It Plays in Peoria Productions, 110 2nd Street Southwest, Suite 100 of the new Auburn Transit Center in downtown Auburn, Washington, USA, 98001. Or call us toll-free, 888-735-6328. Locally, 253-735-6328. Website hosting from Speakeasy, providing nationwide dial-up and high-speed internet DSL connections to homes, businesses, and nonprofits. The website hosts for Pacific Northwest Ballet, speakeasy.net. Opinions expressed on this show are those of the guests and don't necessarily represent this network, station, or program underwriters. The show is produced by It Plays in Peoria Productions, a nonprofit 501c3 organism facilitating epiphanies since the second millennium. I'm Paul Nelson. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, please stay well.